up. All right. Good morning. The State Affairs Committee meeting will come to order at 2 minutes after nine. We're in teleconference already?
Yes, we are.
All right. And we have present, back from wherever he was, Vice Chairman Miller.
Ariel Wolfhunt.
That's right. Ariel Wolfhunt. Senator Ellis, Senator Duncan, and myself, Senator Lehman. Our agenda today will include HCR 5 relating to the Alaska Girls State, and then the three anti-stalking bills, Senate Bills 11, 22, and 23, and then, if we have sufficient time, bills that we've previously heard. First up is HCR 5. We have the prime sponsor, Representative Gail Phillips from Homer, with us. Please join us at the table, and if you'd like to make a statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to members of the committee for scheduling HCR 5. HCR 5 is fairly well self-explanatory. It's a resolution saluting the Girl State to be held in Fairbanks this summer, June 6th through 13th. I hope nobody has any questions on this.
I do.
Senator Ellis, give her a tough
time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your sponsorship of this, and just want to point out that we're racing between the Boys State and the Girls State. We're ahead so far, so I'm sure you'll be catching up here pretty soon. I notice in the packets there are not included any of the selection criteria. When those were included for the other resolution, there was a section there, and I wrote, rose on the floor to point out that criteria number 9 for selection to Boys State was that people not be radicals, that radicals are undesirable. And I just posed the question, does that mean long-haired kids or kids that dress funny, or what exactly does that mean? I just wonder, just out of curiosity's sake, if the Girls State also has a conclusion on what someone would say were radical students. I thought back to my junior year in high school and wondered if I looked or acted like a radical at the time, and if I wouldn't have been able to go to Boys State and Boys Nation because of that selection criteria. I'm sorry to put you on the spot. You probably don't know, but I was planning to take that up with the sponsors of the program, because what a subjective criteria. Radical students. I don't know in 1993 what radical means for selection, where maybe in the 60s that's when it came into being, and maybe people knew what radicals were back then. But do you have any comment, Representative Phillips?
Thank you, Senator Ellis. I have never seen it. It was never mentioned by the auxiliary, and we can ask them about it, but I haven't seen those criteria, and I would imagine that what came out, what were the criteria in 1960, probably are vastly different by 93, but that it didn't come up with any of our discussion at all.
I just want to note that we have online Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kodiak, and Valdez. Senator Duncan.
I was just going to ask Representative Phillips, did you attend Girl State?
No, unfortunately I didn't. I grew up in Nome, and it wasn't an option to us when we were growing up there.
Because we had a couple of folks, when we passed the Boys State resolution, Senator Ellis and Senator Phillips gave endorsements, almost changed my mind. I was just wondering if...
She's a product.
If you're a product. Not that it would change my mind, I didn't mean to imply that.
Senator Duncan, I won't carry it any farther.
Senator Rieger and I also attended Boys State. We convinced
that
Senator Duncan
my mind.
The other way, so we finally got his vote.
You didn't say anything, or I would have voted against it.
What's the pleasure of the committee regarding HCR 5?
Approve the bill with unanimous be passed.
Are there any objections?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Phillips. HCR 5 is discharged from the State Affairs Committee.
I got a heavy workout
today. We next have before us Senate Bills 11, 22, and 23. And the I'd like to call up the representative from Senator Pertula's office. Would you join us at the table and state your name for the record, and I assume you have a statement, a sponsor statement. So go ahead and share it with us.
Sure. My name is Bill Kelder. I work for Senator Jay Curtulo.
and I'm here to give his sponsor statement on this bill. He is tied up in finances and offers his apologies to the committee for not being able to be here.
Go ahead.
I want to thank the committee chairman, Senator Lehman, and the members of the committee for holding this hearing on SB 11 this morning, and for giving the public an opportunity to testify on what we feel is an important issue. Senator Catula introduced SB 11 primarily for two reasons. First, because he believes anti-stalking legislation is necessary to protect the safety and lives of Alaskans. And second, because a number of citizens and interest groups contacted him asking that such a bill be introduced. Senate Bill 11 amends the state's existing law on terroristic threatening, that's Alaska Statute 11.56.810, to make stalking a criminal act. The bill does this by dividing terroristic threatening into two levels, terroristic threatening in the first degree, which would be a Class C felony under this bill, and terroristic threatening in the second degree, which would be a Class A misdemeanor. Besides the criminal conduct contained in the existing law, terroristic threatening in the first degree under this bill includes conduct that constitutes terroristic threatening in the second degree when that conduct violates a court order or when the person has been convicted of terroristic threatening in the second degree within 7 years of committing a new crime. In other words, repeat second degree offenders become first degree offenders under Senate Bill 11. Second degree terroristic threatening covers situations wherein a person recklessly places another in fear or of death or physical injury to themselves or a family member by knowingly and repeatedly following or lying in wait for the person or family member or conduct similar conduct. Senator Catula filed a sponsor substitute on this bill to include language relating to a person who is currently in a dating, courtship, or engagement relationship with the person being stalked or threatened. This change was made in consultation with the Department of Law, Legislative Legal Counsel, the Department of Public Safety, and various domestic violence support groups such as the Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Senate Bill 11 has a zero fiscal note from the Department of Law, the Department of Public Safety, and the Department of Corrections. It has received a favorable review from the Public Safety Department and the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police. The Alaska Network on Domestic Violence, which represents 22 Alaskan communities, has written in support of SB 11, and the need for anti-stalking legislation in Alaska has been endorsed by the Valley Women's Resource Center and various women's and support groups throughout Alaska. Since 1990, 29 states have enacted anti-stalking laws. It is time Alaska, which has already seen too many injuries and deaths resulting from stalking, joins these other states by enacting Senate Bill 11. As the Department of Law said in its February 1st memo accompanying the fiscal note to SB 11, and I quote here, "The prevention of one murder will certainly outweigh the prosecution of several terroristic threatening crimes, both in human and in monetary terms." That pretty much concludes the statement that the sponsor prepared. I'd certainly be happy to try to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Kelder. Do we have any questions for Mr. Kelder? All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have a representative from Senator Zaroff's office. Regarding SB 23, please join us. I just want to note for those here and those listening on the teleconference network that we have three bills on the same topic that are very similar. We're going to be hearing what the differences are from legal counsel, but the reason for taking them all together is they're very similar, and I want to give opportunity for each of the sponsors to at least make a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Pam Dundee with Senator Zaroff's office as legislative assistant. Senate Bill 23 basically covers the same things that Senator Catula's bill covers, with one exception. The seven-year period that starts running on this bill that the victim or members of the victim's family or household are protected begins running following the completion of the sentence. This includes the probationary period and the actual jail time that the person would have served, and then the 7 year starts running. In the other bills, the 7 year starts running from the time of conviction of the crime. So the basic difference is it gives the victim more time in which they are free from this type of harassment.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the committee? Thank you very much. I note that we've been joined by Senator Taylor. full committee of five now. And
exciting.
In terms of my own statement, I guess I'll pass the gavel to Senator Miller just briefly.
Senator Lehman.
Senate Bill 22 does much of what we've heard regarding Senate Bill 11 and 23. There are some differences that we will be hearing, and I too saw a need for legislation regarding stocking, and so that's why I introduced it, and I don't think I need to belabor it, and I will have other comments during the deliberations.
Thank you, Senator Lehman.
I'd next like to call up Jerry, is it Luckout? If I'm reasonably close, I know I've seen your name on a number of drafts and probably talked with you. If you would join us, and I understand you're going to share with us an analysis of the differences between the three bills, or differences, I should say, among the three bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is, for the record, Jerry Luckout. I'm legislative counsel for the Division of Legal Services for the legislature. The bills, as all the previous witnesses have stated, are very similar. There are, as Pam from Senator Zaroff pointed out, Zaroff's office pointed out, the real difference between SB 22 or SB 23, which is Senator Zaroff's bill, from SSSB 11 and SB 22, is that SB 23 deals with, if you've previously been convicted of terroristic threatening in second degree, that's the basic stalking offense, and while you are serving that sentence or within 7 years after you complete the serving of that sentence, you contact the victim at any time, except when that contact is permitted by court order, then you are now committing the new crime of terroristic threatening in the first degree, which is the felony offense. The differences between, that's really the only real difference between Senator Zaroff's bill 23 and the other two. The differences between 22 and 11, if you look on page 2, line 24 of the sponsor substitute for SB 11, we have, in addition to the definition of family member, and we are adding in the a person who is in a dating, courtship, or engagement relationship with the person. And that's significant to the effect that this crime punishes someone who places a person in fear of death or physical injury, or a member of the family is in fear of death or physical injury by the stalking behavior. The definition in the other two bills merely limits that to spouses and blood relatives of the victim, or a person who lives in the same household as the victim. This expands that definition of family member to include persons who are in that dating relationship who may not live with the victim. And that's the only other difference between the three bills. I could respond to any questions you have. Those are just the differences. If there's any questions about what conduct we're actually trying to reach here, or those definitions of lying in wait and things, I can respond to those too.
All right, thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Luckout? I do, I just have a question. One of my concerns is that none of these in this approach would in any way take away from what I guess I would call constitutionally protected activity of expression, on whether somebody wants to picket or otherwise demonstrate, go in a parade, and you know, there are people who do that, and just want to make sure that that none of this would ever, you know, be used to somehow come against that. What have you considered that, and well, what's your interpretation of that type of activity?
Mr. Chairman, that has been considered in the drafts of the bill. Some other states have specifically placed provisions in law saying that picketing and those things are not included within the definition of stalking. Depending upon how you place that in, that you can force the prosecution to have to disprove in every case that the person was not picketing. and it sometimes can create a great burden. If a person is engaging in a constitutionally protected behavior, then they basically, by definition, cannot be convicted of this offense. That would be an issue they can raise, and the court would then, you know, I would think in a particular situation, if it was a picketing offense, let's say, with the examples here in Juneau lately of Greens Creek closing down and potential that there could be some picketing outside of their offices by some of the workers who believe that closing down is unfair or something, the employees of Greens Creek, the management employees couldn't use that as an excuse to have someone picked up for stalking under this. I think the police departments would, our peace officers would utilize some discretion in understanding that there are constitutionally protected behaviors that this statute cannot reach. Margot Knuth from the AG's office has, I think, dealt with this question when the House bills on this issue were being discussed too. So she can offer you the AG's Department of Law's perspective on this, but I don't believe it's necessary that we put in any particular statement that constitutionally protected behavior is excluded from the bill, and that it will be by definition. If it's constitutionally protected, you can't be convicted of the offense.
Thank you. And the one other question I had was in Section 2, we talk about recklessly placing another person in fear of death or physical injury. Would it be more appropriate to use the term serious physical injury? I don't know if courts have, you know, stalking laws are fairly new, and I don't know if courts have examined this enough to determine whether or not, I mean, I think that's what the intent is, but whether it means any physical injury, and I don't know. I think there are some activities that we could probably place ourselves in. For example, I played in a legislative basketball game, and I think just about every game we play in, we run the risk of injury, especially with a bunch of slow people and as we get older. But I just wondered if that would be necessary to clarify that that's the intent in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, the legislature has defined physical injury and serious physical injury, and so I guess I could give you those definitions and then you could consider those differences. Physical injury means a physical pain or an impairment of a physical condition. That's what physical injury means as the legislature has defined that for purposes of our criminal laws. Serious physical injury means a physical injury caused by an act performed under circumstances that create a substantial risk of death, or physical injury that causes serious and protracted disfigurement, protracted impairment of health, protracted loss or impairment of the function of a body member or organ, or that unlawfully terminates a pregnancy. So you basically, the physical injury has to be, or serious physical injury has to be very great. One, it's serious enough that it could, it creates a substantial risk of death, or it causes impairment of a limb or a serious impairment of health. That's a decision that this committee can make. If you want to go with the serious physical injury, then you're going to be excluding some conduct that this bill will no longer reach. Physical injury means any physical injury, any pain. So that when a person is placed in fear of any physical pain, someone could be prosecuted under this bill if they meet the other elements of the offense. Serious physical injury ties it into that death or serious impairment of a limb.
What's that citation you're reading from?
1181-900. Okay. That's the definition section for all of the offenses in Title 11.
Do we have any questions for committee? Senator Duncan?
Yes, just one further question, and maybe you went over this and gave us the answer or a recommendation. The difference between the bills is the 7 years. One in Senate Bill 11 and Senate Bill 22, you're guilty of terroristic threatening in the first degree if within 7 years before the commission of the crime, the person has been convicted of the crime. And in Senator Zaroff's bill, it's after you serve the sentence, 7 years after you serve the sentence, right?
Or while you're serving.
What is the norm? What would be, I mean, is there anything that, is it just a judgment call on our part as to what one we would adopt?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, yeah, the other states have States are passing stalking laws every day. Wyoming just passed theirs last Thursday. Michigan passed one approximately 2 months ago. There's somewhere between 25 and 30 states, well, probably 25 to 35 states now that have stalking laws. Some have used an aggravator like this to just differentiate between the basic stalking and the first degree stalking, which would be the felony offense. Some have placed a number of years as a condition to when you repeat the conduct. Others have placed no condition at all. And those differences can be seen between the Senate bills and the House bills. There's one bill in the House that sets no time limitation. If you've been previously convicted of the basic stalking offense, the second degree offense, and you ever again commit stalking, then it's always going to be a first offense. So you can set 5 years, or you can choose to set no period at all, or 7 years, or 10 years, or those would be in your discretion to set.
Could you just review for us what the penalties are for a Class C felony, and I think the other is what, a Class A misdemeanor?
A Class A misdemeanor provides a term of imprisonment up to 1 year. A Class C felony is punishable under 1225.125. Or 1255.125, I mean. And a Class C felony currently carries a penalty of a definite term of imprisonment of not more than 5 years. And there is no presumptive offense for a first offense in these conditions. No presumptive term for a first offense. Presumptive term for a second offense would be 2 years. So if this is the second class, the second felony conviction of the person, they would get 2 years. The Supreme Court, well, actually the Alaska Court of Criminal Appeals, has set a term that period that for a first offender, the first offender should not receive a sentence unless there are specific aggravating conditions that are worse than what a second offender would receive. So a first offender would receive a term of imprisonment of less than 2 years.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions for Mr. Luckow? All right, I'm going to go to Fairbanks and pick up Mike Nielsen, who's the captain of the Fairbanks Police Department. Are you there, Mr. Nielsen?
Yes, I'm here, sir.
Okay, we're dealing with, as you probably have heard, Senate Bills 11, 22, and 23, and if you have testimony to provide on any or all of them, please proceed.
Thank you. Representative of the Police Department, we are very supportive of this effort by the legislature. This is a very necessary tool for law enforcement. There are cases here we've had in our city and throughout the state where it would have been an effective tool and may have prevented a homicide. One of the differences that we've noticed in reviewing these is Senate Bill 11, subsection 3A, that they constitute the crime violating a court order. We believe that's very important. The court orders we have right now don't really offer protection unless we can get them back in force, and they offer no real protection if someone is dedicated and serious about harming someone. So that's a big difference. And we also like the section under the definitions of four, the dating, courtship, engagement, relationship. That's also very important. Approximately 50% of these type incidents involve that persons in those relationships.
Does that complete your testimony?
Thank you, sir.
We have a question for you from Senator Taylor.
Yes, Officer, I don't know how to phrase this exactly, but what you're talking about when you said orders, you're talking about a domestic violence order that's entered as a civil order on a domestic civil case. Isn't that correct?
Yes, so that's what we're referring to. It offers no real protection if the person is seriously going to go out and harm them. We may find the person in the area, and unless he's specifically precluded from being within that zone, and he may be just another 100 feet outside the zone, as law enforcement officers, we're unable to take any action at this time. Under these new rules, the stalking laws, perhaps we'll be able to effect an arrest.
Well, I understand that. I guess my concern is, to what extent do you believe this will be abused, or to what extent do you find from your experience domestic violence orders and other complaints of assault where you have to arrive at a house and somebody's already to sign a complaint because they've been battling one another, but once you've arrived there, then they don't want to sign any complaints anymore. I mean, How often will this be abused, in your opinion?
I don't believe it'll be abused in terms of the stalking law. The current situation, when we arrive there, if there's signs of violence, our policy is to make an arrest if there, if it appears there has been signs of violence. This will allow us to take action when it appears that it's serious physical injury is likely to result, and there hasn't been any physical action or violence between the parties as yet. If we catch the individual, say, within the zone, he does have a weapon, it allows us to give a cooling off period for the night at least.
Do we have any further questions, Mr. Nielsen? Thank you very much for your testimony, and we'll go to Anchorage. Howard Berger with the Alaska State Troopers, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, sir.
Okay, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Very good, sir. I was asked by the Commissioner's Office to come in advisory capacity if you had any questions for public safety. I'm a First Sergeant with the State Troopers on the record staff. My name's Howard Berger. Basically, I'm here if you have any, if any of the witnesses has any questions about how public safety stands on this.
Okay, I'll just ask you, how do the, what's the position of the department?
We support this legislation. We suggested the additional language for the sponsor substitute for SB 11. We had one slight difference in what we suggested. We suggested the language say current courting, dating, or engagement relationship. You see that the word currently was not included, but we like what we see with all these legislation. And I guess if we had one that we liked better than the others, it would be SB 11.
Okay, do we have any questions? Mr. Berger, thank you for your testimony. I have Valdez and Kodiak online, but I don't have the names of anybody wishing to testify. Is there anybody in Kodiak who wishes to testify on any of these bills?
My name is Dorothy Weeks, and I work at the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center. And I would like to say that we support this the bill, and I would like to ask the Mr. Berger. We, from what I've seen and what I've heard, in these stalking cases, a lot of times it's not current. You know, it's 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and this person is still following and making life miserable and threatening and all this. I wonder why they think that the current word would be better than just left out. You know, I don't know. Otherwise, I think it's good legislation, and we certainly hope you will pass this bill. One of them, anyway. They're all pretty good.
Thank you, Mrs. Weeks. We'll go back to Mr. Berger. Did you have any comment in response to the testimony you just heard?
Sir, the reason we added the word currently is we took it from the current domestic violence legislation statutes that are on the books. A person can be in a dating relationship with a number of people, and after breaking off a dating relationship, how soon afterwards could it be considered to where they'd be threatened? If you had a person you were dating and broke off with them 2 years ago, and that person were threatened, would you really care? So we inserted the word currently because the relationship as an ongoing thing would be strongest from a current dating engagement or courtship.
Thank you. Is there anybody else in Kodiak who wishes to testify?
No, today.
All right. Is there anybody in Valdez who wishes to testify?
Yes, this is Craig Williams. I'm a reporter with KCHU here.
Please proceed with your testimony.
Okay, I have a question more than a statement, I guess, as reporters usually do. I'm also looking at House Bill 64 here, which I had a copy of, which is also stalking legislation. And looking through that, I noticed that it includes AS Section 11.56.810. And so I guess my question is, I don't quite understand, I must be missing something here, how the three Senate bills that you're looking at would actually change the law beyond that, I just wonder if someone can answer a question for about how the 11, 22, and 23 would differ from current terroristic threatening law beyond those two areas that I mentioned.
Okay, I just want to note that we are not dealing with House Bill 64 today. We're dealing with the Senate bills, but I will ask if the representative of the Department of Law would like to come forward and maybe try to respond to your question.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Knuth, would you go ahead and state your name for the record, and if you'd like to tackle that one, have at it.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Margot Knuth. I'm with the Department of Law Criminal Division, and I'm not sure that I fully understood what the question was. There was a reference to 11. Well, the purpose of the stalking law and of changing the terroristic threatening statute is to reach conduct that is not reached by existing law, and namely, it is those who recklessly place another in fear of death or physical injury by lying in wait or engaging in similar conduct. If the gentleman could perhaps repeat his other question, I'd be glad to try to respond to it.
Sorry that I wasn't clear. I guess it's just that my reading of the three Senate versions, not taking into account the underlying text, which would be new, and then the bracketed part, which would be taken out. Just reading it as it must read now, I guess I don't understand what the major difference in terms of anti-stalking legislation is between the way the law now reads, the terroristic threatening law now reads, and what drastic changes there would be if the proposed amendments were to be put into law.
That's a new section. Just tell them.
The elements are different, and it depends on which section you are under. Current terroristic threatening requires intent to place another person in fear of death or serious physical injury. The proposal reaches recklessly placing another person in fear of death or physical injury.
That's not currently included under terroristic threatening in the second degree, I guess.
That is, you are correct.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not reading it right. Second degree is a new section.
Correct.
Okay. I'm sorry. I had missed that before. Okay. And how about, can you just explain that what the changes under first degree terroristic threatening would be if the amendments were to go through?
They acknowledge aggravating circumstances under which terroristic threatening in the second degree should be elevated to a felony. Namely, if the conduct violates a court order or the person has committed a similar offense within a period of time in the past.
Okay, my question's answered. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. We also have the MADSU LIO online, and I have signed up to testify Leslie Bogda. I hope I didn't butcher that too badly, and if you're there, would you please present your testimony?
Thank you. This is Lester Bonda. I'm the director of Valley Women's Resource Center. And I am very anxious to see the stalking legislation passed. In the past, we've had many victims come into our shelter and tell us about stalking that has occurred in their life. And I recall one incident just not too long ago where we called the police because it happened to be a man, was just stalking the woman and threatening her and causing her to have grave fear for her life. And the police at that time were unable to do anything. So anything that will help them, and they wanted to do something, so anything that will help them, I think, will be very positive. I've been looking at Senator Curtula's legislation, and it's my understanding that the House Bill 64 is currently being supported by the Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And from what I understood, your committee is reviewing the Senate bills. And I encourage you to pass this legislation and strongly support change in our law, as was recently described by a didn't catch her name, but the woman that was speaking, because I know that it will make a difference and keep people safer. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have any questions from the committee? We will come here to Juno, and to those who've signed up to testify, first is Marcia McKenzie. Ms. Knut?
At some point, I did have a comment on the bill that I wanted to share, and I am expecting to be called to Senate Finance on another matter.
Okay, why don't you go ahead right now? I noted down here that you said if there are questions, and
correct.
Go ahead and make your comment if you don't mind waiting just for a second.
Thank you. I noticed that all three of these proposals authorize warrantless arrests, which is, I think, entirely appropriate for stalking. But they do it in a way that I think could be improved upon. And in all of the bills, it's Section 3. The warrantless arrest section right now authorizes police officers to make a warrantless arrest for any violation of number 1, 1156-740, and I don't have my statutes in front of me. I'm not sure which one that is. But then the second group is a number of offenses when the victim is in a relationship with the defendant. And these bills all include stalking in that second provision, and I would suggest that it be deleted from there and instead added to Section 1, because we would like to make a warrantless arrest of a stalker regardless of the relationship between the stalker and the victim. If it isn't somebody who is in that relationship, it's still a serious matter, and the whole point of having a stalking law is to be able to make that arrest before something tragic occurs. A technical problem, I think, is that the existing language refers to 1156-810A3, which is the felony offense, and you don't need a warrant to make arrests for felonies. So I think that what would be more effective would be to amend 1225-030B1 to simply say AS 1156-740 or 1156-812, semicolon, or, and then go on to 2, and delete the new references that are currently being made in 2.
Okay, I expect that we're going to be developing a committee substitute, and I'll just ask you to work with the staff, of course, of Babcock, and maybe we can get that in writing and make sure we have it clearly, and we'll bring it back before the committee.
And I apologize for not noticing it before this morning.
No problem. Just before Ms. Knut has to leave, any questions of her for the committee? Senator Taylor?
Well, that's one of the things I noted too, Margo, and I was concerned about. It appeared as though it was only going to be available to a narrow class of people who knew or had contact with one another, and it wouldn't address the more bizarre case that we see with movie stars, so to speak, and others,
exactly,
where some person is stalked by some stranger. And so I appreciate your comments on it. I would also appreciate it if you would address in the recommendations you make to staff for amendments, narrowing, if we could, or providing for additional standards so as to avoid misuse or abuse of this system or this law, because I am concerned about that also.
Mr. Chairman, I certainly will attempt to do so. In fact, my comfort level with the concept of a stalking law has increased significantly during the course of this session, and the language that's being used here, I think, is not going to lend itself to abuses. There may be some attempted abuses. I expect police will get phone calls where somebody would like to take advantage of this, and I believe that law enforcement officers are going to be able to distinguish those situations, that they're rather apparent when they arise. You can listen to a person's fact situation and readily make a judgment of whether this is what the bill is aimed at or not, but it's certainly a matter that, that we could look further in.
Senator Miller?
Thank you. Could you just kind of walk me through this, this section two here? It says a person commits the crime of terroristic threatening in the second degree if the person recklessly places another person in fear of death or physical injury. Could you just kind of walk me through that, you know, the term reckless or in fear, is that in fear of, in the victim's mind, that death or physical injury, or just walk
sure.
me through that.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and Senator Miller, it is the victim's fear of death or physical injury, and the mental standard or state for the defendant is recklessly causing another person to have that type of fear, and recklessly is defined in the criminal code. I haven't a copy of it in front of me, but it is something along the lines of is aware of and disregards, consciously disregards a substantial risk that the conduct will have this result. So you need a defendant who knows, is aware of, and is disregarding this substantial risk that his or her conduct is going to cause actual fear to the victim. That's particularly appropriate, I think, in a stalking law, because most stalking is committed by somebody who's been in a relationship with the victim, and they peculiarly know how to push the victim's buttons and how to create that fear of death or physical injury. So the Department of Law is comfortable with the mens rea of recklessly rather than knowingly or intentionally in this case. It makes a great deal of sense to us. We have existing assault statutes that use these same elements. Placing another person in fear of imminent death or physical injury is particularly covered by existing assault statutes. The reason that's not proven useful in stalking situations is because the courts have defined imminent, I think accurately enough, to mean that the person believes they are going to be killed or injured immediately, such as having a gun pointed at them. And we've had circumstances where we can't prosecute somebody who points an unloaded gun at another person if the person, that victim, knows that it's unloaded. And yet, that is, I think, a terribly fearful situation. You never want a gun pointed at you. And so here's conduct that's not falling within our existing assault statutes, but that warrants intervention. These stalking proposals also require knowingly and repeatedly following or lying in wait for the person or family member or engaging in similar conduct. And the traditional stalking behavior is the person who is following and threatening somebody.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could just follow that up.
Senator Miller?
Because the wording in that first paragraph, and then it goes on, each phrase after that is or. It doesn't say and, it's or in each of the conjunction. But I'm just following up on a point that Senator Lehman brought up earlier, and what about the right of constitutionally protected free speech? And you know, let's get, you know, I think probably the most apt case where, you know, where a crime of this could be brought, let's go to the abortion clinics. And we have, you know, picketing on the outside. You know, the woman going into there may very well in her mind, you know, see it, or she may have a fear of death or physical injury. And the person, you know, picketing, you know, I guess he would qualify it, or I don't know how he would fit into this whole thing. How does he fit into this? You know, I have a fear that this could be used in what I feel is a constitutionally protected right to picket those.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Miller, no criminal law could affect constitutional behavior. You cannot unconstitutionally apply a law. So to the extent that it is protected behavior, it's not covered by this statute. But I think what's more useful is to go ahead and focus on that situation. And my analysis is that I don't think it's possible for a person to commit the stalking offense at an abortion clinic situation unless they're committing some other crime already or have committed another crime. I don't think that this could be used in a way to reach Right to Life groups unless they're already committing another crime of assault in the fourth degree or criminal trespass. And I just went through it analyzing it that way. And it's because this law requires the person to recklessly place another in fear of death or physical injury. And the only way that they can do that is if their conduct is so significant that I think they've already committed. Crime of assault. They've done something that is creating this fear of death or physical injury, and that's not what we normally have happening at these protests. I mean, protests are people have strong feelings, but there isn't physical altercations going on. There, if you do get to the point where, well, if you do have somebody causing physical harm to another person, you have committed the crime of assault, and it won't be a stalking statute that you use to address that conduct. These stalking laws also require following or lying in wait, and I don't know that you would have that phenomenon at an abortion clinic. So I think that's even a third distinguishing feature here. You don't, if you're having a civil protest at an abortion clinic, you are not engaging in following or lying in wait behavior. You're out there, you're visible, you are conducting your protest.
Senator Taylor, did you have a follow-up on the comment regarding violating court order?
No, I just was mentioning Senator Miller that violating a court order was another method by which might end up in this situation, and I think you'll find that the people who do this sort of conduct probably have been ordered by a judge at some point in time not to do it, but we're talking in civil terms. When they get arrested, I think they're usually arrested for trespass or for violating the court's order, actually a contempt order. I don't know. I've never really looked into it very much, how they get arrested. I'm just making that as an assumption. But it would seem that if they have previously been ordered not to do this kind of conduct, they then show up and do it. I think it probably falls under other statutes more readily than it would this one. I would have to agree with Ms. Canute.
Before I go to Senator Ellis, do you have a comment on that?
I think that analysis is correct.
Senator Ellis?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the definition of assault in the fourth degree?
I would like to refer to the criminal code, which I see is right over here.
I'd like to help you, but I can't remember.
And, you know, I guess I'd take exception to your characterization of what goes on at these protests. If people are there waiting for someone to come to have a medical procedure performed at an abortion clinic, And they're in someone's face saying that if you kill your baby, we're going to hurt you. I mean, lying in wait, I don't know, there's a very easy way to use the words in this statute to criminalize that kind of behavior. So I'm wondering if assault in the fourth degree is, you know, if you kill your baby, we're going to hurt you. I mean, does that fall under assault in the fourth degree? The words in this stalking bill lead me to believe that that kind of behavior that happens every day in this country would be criminalized under, if this were to become a new statute. I mean, people do wait for women to show up to have abortions at clinics. I mean, I don't know if that's lying in wait, but they are waiting, and they make what I would call terroristic threats. Now, some maybe this doesn't characterize accurately some of the recent protests in Alaska, but it certainly could in the future, and certainly does things that have happened in Missouri that I'm familiar with.
Okay. Ms. Knuth?
Thank you. To respond, assault in the fourth degree is the person recklessly causes physical injury to another person, or by words or other conduct, recklessly places another person in fear of imminent physical injury. The situation that you've proposed, I don't think falls under either of these. But I'm not aware that the Constitution protects behavior that you described. It's one thing to say, I don't think you should get an abortion, and God will punish you for that, or something like that. But what you described was, if you get an abortion, I'm going to hurt you. And if that is said in a way that causes fear of physical injury or death, I mean, if that is a terroristic threat, I'm not aware that any constitution protects that. I mean, that sounds like criminal behavior.
Do we have any further questions of Ms. Knuth? Thank you very much for joining us. Senator Taylor?
Not really a question, but I would comment that I agree with her completely up to this point, except with one statement, and that is that I think we can pass all kinds of unconstitutional things, and we only discover that they're unconstitutional when someone takes them up to either our court, Supreme Court, or the United States Courts of Appeal, and some judge then determines that they have become or are unconstitutional in their application. So I am concerned about it, and I'm sure you are too, but like you, I feel that it probably is being addressed by other criminal statutes, and maybe because of the family member nature of this law or the relationship nature of this law may be difficult to apply. It isn't necessarily family members that lie in wait at abortion clinics or people who have contact. And that's where leaving the bill as it is right now would probably preclude arrests at those places under this statute. Amending it, as you had suggested, so as to encompass the stranger who's being stalked or lying in wait for, might expand it to where there is maybe a possible application to that situation. But I think that can be addressed as we move through the amendment process to make sure that we're not expanding it beyond what the intent is.
Do you have a response?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, the expansion that I was suggesting only goes to when you can make a warrantless arrest for the misdemeanor, not to when the offense is committed. And actually, all of these stalking proposals are based simply on the behavior and do not have a relationship requirement in them. So in order to limit the offense of stalking to some relationship, the language would have to be amended. As it stands now, strangers can stalk movie stars or whatever, and it would fall under the bill. What would happen is you could not have a warrantless arrest in that situation.
That's right. Thank you for your testimony and for being a resource to us today.
Thank you.
Marsha McKenzie, thanks for waiting.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marcia McKenzie. I'm with the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And the Council is supportive of this type of legislation because it's going to add protection for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault from violent pursuers who may be stalking the victim and placing them in fear of death or physical injury. And we are supportive of legislation that would create the crime of stalking and provide police with the ability to make arrests of violent, harassing, and threatening behaviors towards innocent citizens have always been a serious problem, particularly for victims of domestic violence and sexual abuse. And while laws such as protective restraining orders exist to protect victims from violent pursuers, law enforcement officers may not intervene until the order's been violated, and then by that time it's probably too late to prevent the offenders from harming or even killing those where the orders were designed to protect them. Each year, an estimated 6 million women are beaten by the men they live with. A third of the women who are murdered each year are killed by husbands or boyfriends, and national statistics show that about 30% of all female homicide victims were stalked prior to their murders. Leaving a bad relationship is often the most dangerous time for a woman. Most women are killed when the relationship breaks up rather than at other times during the relationship. And some stalkers fixate on coworkers or complete strangers, and not all the victims are female, but the vast majority of cases do involve former lovers or spouses. This type of legislation will cover the gaps that restraining orders cannot handle, and it'll give more leverage against people who ignore the restraining orders. If the offender's arrested and convicted for a felony crime, they would be more subject to parole supervision after release. California passed the nation's first stalking law in 1990, a year after five Orange County women were murdered in separate incidents despite temporary restraining orders against their assailants who had been stalking them, in those cases their husbands or boyfriends. And the legislation had impetus from cases involving Hollywood celebrities who were stalked by obsessed fans, but they've also used the stalking law in California for domestic violence cases, and there's been about 27 other states that have filed suits. The Council on Domestic Violence would like to suggest that there be included an additional aggravating factor which would make the crime a felony if the offender stalks the victim and is in possession of a deadly weapon. A similar change was added to restraining order provisions 2 years ago because the combination where you've got the restraining order and there's a weapon. And then we'd also like to see the provision in section 13B broadened to include convictions of any violent crime against a person, because an offender may have repeated convictions for assault or sexual assault, and the past history of violence is a strong indicator of potential lethality. One other comment that I'd like to pass along for you is that our preference would probably be to see a separate crime of stalking rather than terroristic threatening, because one of the problems that we see with including it under existing statute is that from a computerized criminal history, it's kind of difficult to tell what the nature of the previous behavior would be. And so if you had a perpetrator charged with stalking under a subsection of the terroristic threatening, you don't know whether a previous conviction could have been for blowing up a building or for stalking type behavior. So those would be the comments, but the Council is very supportive of this legislation.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have any questions for members of the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cindy Smith?
For the record, my name is Cindy Smith. I'm the director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And the network is a coalition of nonprofit programs around the state that provide services to victims and their families. Rather than spend time, because I know we're getting short on time, addressing why we think the bill is necessary, I think you've heard a lot about that. There is right now a fairly substantial gap in current law and the ability to enforce current law in this particular area. We see this kind of legislation as a way of being able to actually reduce incidents of violence and lethality of violence. Right now, if somebody is being stalked, even if they have a restraining order, there's little or nothing that the police can do or that the victim can do about it. So we think this is a really important piece of legislation. We did have, in any event, in whatever the committee draft looks like, several suggestions for changes, which include the changes that the council is recommending, that all violent crimes be included. Right now, somebody has an extensive history of assault and would commit the crime of stalking, we believe that information should be taken into account in the charge. When people have a violent history, there's much more potential for lethality. Similarly with the deadly weapon provision, and for the same reasons. If somebody is stalking you and does not have a weapon, the immediate ability to carry out a homicide is much more serious if they do. But we'd also like to see the offense called stalking, as opposed to inclusion of the terroristic threatening bill. I understand that this was an earlier sort of drafting decision. I understand also from talking to the Department of Law that their concerns can be met and still have the crime called stalking. The request for this legislation came as much originally from police departments as from victims groups, and we're hearing this same request to call the crime stalking from police departments because they say when you're trying to find out what somebody's criminal history is, if it's in a broader category, it's very difficult to make a judgment call about how immediately dangerous the particular situation they're following up is. And I guess I'd be available for any questions. We certainly support the Department of Law's revision. The police are going to make the judgment calls on these cases. We don't anticipate that this law or any law like it would be would meet everybody's individual circumstances. We certainly have no intent of wanting to challenge anybody's constitutional rights. I do believe that the standards knowingly, repeatedly, and recklessly is a fairly significant prosecution standard, and that a case would have to meet all three of those would prevent the kind of charges that were being talked about in terms of abortion clinics.
Any questions from members of the committee? Thank you for your testimony. I'd ask if you and also Marcia, if you put those comments in writing, if you could just get those to the committee. We're going to be developing a committee substitute, and we'd like to be able to pick up as many of those comments as possible. Mr. Luckup, could you join us? And do you have a response regarding the comment of having a separate category called stalking category versus terroristic threatening, and why the decision was made to put it in the category terroristic threatening?
Mr. Chair. Chairman, I'm the only attorney over legal services that doesn't work year round. So I work 6 or 8 months a year, and then when bill requests come in while I'm gone on criminal law subjects, I don't get to draft them. And so the drafting attorney at the time made a decision to place it in terroristic threatening. I don't believe this crime should be placed in terroristic threatening. It's my own personal belief. And in the bills I've drafted since I've come back, particularly one in the House, I've made a different placement. Terroristic threatening, what sort of got me is that I was listening to the radio when some of the bills were introduced at the beginning of the session. They were talking about threats by terrorists. And the clear implication of what they were talking about were Palestinian terrorists or something. The bill doesn't really get across the crime that's being committed here, or when we place it in terroristic threatening. And what we're talking about here is basically an assault-type offense. Assault is when you place someone in fear of physical injury. That's basic assault, as you learn it, a common law assault, as you learn that in law school. And battery is when you actually cause physical injury to that person. This is a crime against a person, and more properly deserves to be in AS 1141. The Department of Law has some concerns about placing it there, as long as we have this form of terroristic threatening. If you look at any of the bills on page 1, the existing forms of terroristic threatening, and particularly that second form, with the intent to place another person in fear of death or serious physical injury by repeated threats and by making repeated threats to the person. That is an assault type offense too. And my remedy to, and that is very similar to the conduct we'll be dealing with in a stalking bill. The Department of Law was concerned that the legislature, when they amend these laws over time, would forget about the existence of this law, that this other terroristic threatening statute would be out there, replace it somewhere else, and that we would then have various provisions that would prohibit the same conduct. And then you can run into some constitutional problems if you try to prosecute for one that may have a greater penalty than the other. My remedy to that is that we amend the terroristic threatening statute and take out this intent to place a person in fear of death and place that with the assault offenses just like it should be. And that's what I've done in the House versions. And the Department of Law has thought that was fine. And that's what I would do if that's the will of this committee. I would place this basically in AS 1141, which are crimes against persons, and create a stalking in the first and second degree. It's rather confusing the way we do it. Once we get it down on paper, it's very easy to see what is occurring. What we would do is take the existing terroristic threatening and leave A1 there in statute. We take out 2, and that would go into assault in the third degree, as is another form of assault in the third degree, because those have the same, they're both Class C felonies. Then we would create 2 new crimes, one stalking in the first degree, which consists of if you commit stalking in the second degree and you do any of these aggravating factors, then we create a new crime of stalking in second degree that is the same thing as our terroristic threatening in second degree right now.
Thank you. Do we have any questions of Mr. Luckup? Senator Taylor?
Yes, I really appreciate those comments. I've had concerns about it, too, from the time I first read the bill along the same lines. But, Mr. Luckup, I also have a concern. I've had significant amounts of experience involving domestic violence orders in divorce cases in particular, and even those which eventually reconcile. And I've seen a lot of abuses there. And it almost becomes a race to the courthouse to see which person can impose the domestic violence on the other the quickest, because whoever gets there first seems to have a distinct advantage. Fortunately, those things only last about 10 days, and there is a review process that is provided for, and a rather immediate one if you wish to go through it. So that those, and the judiciary over time, both the magistrates and the Superior Court judges have become somewhat accustomed to dealing with these things. So now they're asking rather hardball kind of questions and ferreting out the specious from the more genuine. But even so, it's been a very difficult learning process, both for the judiciary and the other people that must enforce it. And now what we're attempting to do here is to take this one step beyond that, take it out of the civil field and into the criminal field. And that's why I want us to, but I'm also acutely aware of what can occur because of the weak, almost non-existent penalties available through a civil domestic violence order. I mean, if someone is intent on doing some damage, you just can't stop them. And you have to turn to something more than the mere contempt of court that really is the only remedy available on the violation of that civil order. And it's just too weak. It's not doing the job. So I really support the concept. I just want to make certain that we're not opening the door for significant abuses, because I can see people dashing to the courthouse not only requesting a domestic violence order, but then immediately running right back in saying, see, I'm being stalked and threatened and terrorized because he tried to call me, or he called me twice last night, or his mother called me, or something else. That's the bottom line of all this. You start having people in relationships that are breaking up. If one party wants to salvage that relationship and the other one does not, mere attempts at contact would become stalking. And especially in smaller communities, where they both have to go to the post office to get their mail, just bumping into one another. I wouldn't suggest that, but I've been through three of them now, where they wanted additional orders because somebody bumped into each other at the post office. In fact, we had two situations where we proved, had to go in and prove, that the lady herself was the one doing the following. She wanted to beat up on him a little bit more, so she wanted him arrested and thrown in jail. That was the purpose that she was going back into court for. I don't want to see somebody facing a felony because of that, and yet at the same time, I certainly don't want to see this continued horrible domestic violence that's going on. I have friends in shelters that are afraid to walk outside the shelter because there's some clown sitting out there in a pickup truck with a rifle. You know, they shouldn't have to face that. And yet at the same time, we don't want to see it abused either. So I'm just trying to find a good balance, and hopefully between your good mind and that of Ms. Knuth, we can come up with something that will provide us with that and give us all some more comfortable feeling when we walk out of this legislature this year that people aren't going to be shot and terrorized and harassed. So I applaud you for that. I really appreciate what you've done so far there on the House side. I look forward to working with you. But any help you can give me in that regard, I'd appreciate it.
Any other comments, questions from the committee? That is all that I have for people who've signed up to testify. Is there anybody else on the teleconference network who wishes to testify at this time?
Mr. Chairman, Howard Berger.
Go ahead.
The language where we define family member as spouse, child, grandparent, parent, grandparent, or sibling, would the committee consider language which includes the in-law relationship, the parent of the spouse, the parent-in-law, the grandparent of the spouse, grandparent-in-law, the brother or sister-in-law? Oftentimes the husband, say, has a close relationship with wife's family. From my reading of this, they would be excluded as qualifying should the stalker take action against the in-laws.
We will consider your comment. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify? Thank you. Is there anybody else in Juneau who wishes to testify? Cindy Smith.
Yes, Freedom of Chair, there's one point that I wanted to make for the committee's consideration that I omitted, which is a discussion about physical injury versus serious physical injury. We would be strongly concerned about a change to serious physical injury standards simply because it does not include crimes like rape. When I was talking to Margo, which I just confirmed with the Department of Law before I got up here, and I was talking to Margo about other kinds of crimes. She said that she had a case where somebody had been stabbed in the stomach. They had to remove the stomach, and it was not charged as a serious physical injury. I mean, the standard is really very high for serious physical injury, and I think that I would like to at least hear more from the Department of Law that either one the definition of serious physical injury needs to change, or that we can't use it for this statute.
Yeah. I guess my comment is, if what you say is correct, then I think we need to be looking at changing the definition of serious physical injury. Is there anybody else in Juneau who wishes to testify on any of these three bills? All right, we will be holding them over, and if any members of the committee have suggestions for amendments that we can incorporate into a committee substitute that we'll be bringing back to you, please get those to us. We have next, we will bring up Senate Bill 18, and then we will be going off the teleconference network.
18.
Senate Bill 18 is appropriation for West Anchorage High School and Romney Junior High School.
Governor Hickel's all the way.
This one
was just there yesterday.
We can refresh our memories on this one, and please bring it up. We had a work session at West High and had probably, 7,500 people present, and maybe 20 people testify, a number of people in there. I'd like to move this bill on to the Finance Committee. I recognize that it's not going to survive in its existing form, but I'd like to give to them so they can put it into the lot of things they're considering regarding school construction. Thanks, Ms. Keller.
Are you interested in further amendments?
If you have amendments, nobody's brought amendments to us, and I know what this could become if we.
I'm ready.
Why do you offer your own bill?
Not yet, I have. I need $9.5 million more. Yeah,
discretionary.
Offer my own bill.
Senator Ellis, do you have any comments regarding your work session or anything regarding the bill? Any problems if we move it on to the Finance Committee?
Please, I'm glad that you, you're very concerned. You kept it under $35 million.
I might note that I think it should be amended, and I will suggest that to the Finance Committee in terms of phasing construction and fitting it in with the other, but rather than us trying to deal with it here, I think it would be more appropriate to put it in the hopper. So,
and if it's in order, Mr. Chairman, I'll move that the bill pass along to the Finance Committee with individual recommendations.
It's in order. Is there any objection?
Good work.
Bill 18 is discharged.
Shuddered a little there.
Great work.
Let the record reflect Taylor shuddered.
And next, I'm going to bring up Senate Bill 80. Mainly to see what the pledge of the committee is. This is this omnibus change bill, and we discussed numerous things, and I requested if you had any amendments that you bring them to us. And
good staff work.
We haven't, as far as I know, we haven't received those. And did you?
Yeah, I have several amendments, and I thought they were all into your staff.
Okay, staff is gone. Ed, why don't we'll hold this over. I'd like to get rid of
the children's review thing.
Right.
Yeah, well, I promised Randy that we'd do that in Hess. So I'll take responsibility. But there are two or three that are more in the purview of this committee.
My thinking was, and I saw the same thing, there were some things that I wanted to take care of, but I thought we could move on.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just so it's on the record, the ones I plan to move are relate to the Older Alaskans Commission and the Pioneer Home Advisory Board for us to consider not consolidating those. And I apologize if these aren't into your staff. I thought they were.
You have to give them 1 year, John.
No, it's deleting the sections in their entirety. And that's a real policy call we ought to give some thought to. The second has to do with eliminating the sections that get rid of the Telecommunication Information Council. And we had testimony from several folks about what a bad idea that was. I guess that's it. The third was the children's thing, and we'll do that in Hess.
Okay. If there are, we'll take your amendments, and we may have them. I don't know. Of course, it's gone right now. But if not, get them to us. We'll get them distributed, and the next time we have a meeting, if we can have the time, we'll bring it up. Let's take care of the bill. We'd like to move it on. We next have before us Senate Bill 26. This is just a minor little technical cleanup bill that thought we might deal with today. It's regarding the convening of the legislature regular session. We've had two hearings on this, and Senator Phillips, if you'd like to join us at the table, you're welcome to. If you don't want to, you don't need to. And I think we've exhausted ourselves regarding comments. Senator Miller?
Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill 26 out of committee with individual recommendation.
Object.
Do I hear any objection? Hearing objection. Comments? Members of the committee? Senator Duncan?
I'd just like to have a roll call vote on it. Okay.
Senator Ellis?
No.
Will you clerk call the roll?
Senator Miller?
Yes.
Senator Taylor?
Yep.
Senator Ellis?
No.
Senator Duncan?
No.
Senator Lee?
Yes.
38, 290.
Senate Bill 26 is discharged from the State Affairs Committee. And that concludes what's on agenda. Any other comments from the committee? We will stand adjourned at 10:22.